This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl.
If you get a minute today, pull out a dollar bill, would you, and have a look at it. On the left side, as you look at it, George is right, you'll see a black circle with a letter in it. That letter tells you which of the Federal Reserve's 12 regional banks distributed that dollar. For my wallet today, L is the San Francisco Fed, F is Atlanta, and so on. The presidents of those regional banks rotate through the Federal Open Market Committee, the interest rate setting FOMC, I should say, I suppose, to give all 12 regions a say in interest rate policy. Five of them voted on today's three-quarter point hike. The thing is, when you look at what parts of the country the regional feds represent, things aren't all that evenly divided. The eastern half of the country is split into eight districts. The western half gets four. New York pretty much gets its own, while on the west coast, one district covers every state west of Colorado, including Alaska and Hawaii. Marketplace's Justin Ho looked into why the Fed's map is so weird.
The answer goes back to 1913, the year the Federal Reserve System was created. Back then, the people who did the creating agreed on one thing.
Everyone figured if you created one bank, it would get controlled by New York bankers.
That's Gary Richardson. He's a professor of economics at UC Irvine, and he was the Fed's first historian between 2012 and 2016. Richardson says people didn't think New York bankers would keep their regional interests in mind when setting interest rates. For instance, farmers in the Midwest often had big mortgages and seasonal incomes, and people in the South wanted to maintain apartheid.
The control of money and finance was an important way that the local white elites maintained control over the poor whites and the African American.
So a committee came together and divided the country up into 12 districts. Richardson says the idea was to loosely reflect the regional economies of the time. Big financial hubs got banks, New York and Chicago. Cleveland got one to handle the economy of the Great Lakes region. The West Coast, sparsely populated at the time, got one bank in San Francisco.
You know, Richmond, they can be the specialist in tobacco and financing the tobacco industry. St. Louis, right, they say we need a bank that has expertise in funding the inland waterborne trade of the U.S.
All 12 banks were independent, so they could set their own interest rates. That was great if you wanted a central bank that could set policy based on, say, tobacco seasons. Not so great if you need those banks to work together to stop the entire economy from collapsing.
Some economists have basically blamed the Great Depression on the fact that these regional banks had a lot of power.
Sarah Bender is a professor at George Washington University and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. She says in the early 30s, Congress redesigned the Fed and created the Open Market Committee, or FOMC, to set interest rates for the whole country. Bender says that made the Fed look a lot like it does today.
Now, we still have reserve banks. They still vote on monetary policy. But the system is far more centralized than it was back in 1913.
But the Fed's district map hasn't really changed, even though the economy has, and populations and industries have moved around.
Right, look at North Carolina, like Charlotte, major financial center for the South and Mid-Atlantic and Southeast. But Charlotte doesn't have a reserve bank. Richmond has one, but there really aren't very many big banks in Richmond.
Bender says it's unlikely the Fed's district boundaries will change anytime soon. For one, Congress would have to do it. Bender says the regional banks have tried to make themselves indispensable by specializing.
Kansas City, like going out and sponsoring the Jackson Hole Conference. You know, St. Louis has FRED, the economic and the political history data. San Francisco deals with the Silicon Valley finance and so forth.
It might not matter that the Fed's district map is so outdated. The U.S. economy is a lot more integrated than it was in 1913. A farmer in Wyoming might borrow from a lender in Atlanta. As a result,
when you go into FOMC meetings, you do not see that bank presidents vote to represent the needs of the district.
That's Frederick Mishkin, a banking professor at Columbia and a former voting member of the Fed's Board of Governors.
A bank president can vote however they want, but it's recognized by all parties that, in fact, it's not that you should represent the Cleveland district or you should represent the Richmond district or whatever. Your job is to represent the country as a whole.
Mishkin says the regional banks do play a vital role in the Fed's messaging.
When the Fed's doing tough stuff like it is right now in raising rates, the district banks are very important in terms of generating support for the system. They can talk to major players in their district to make sure that they understand why the Fed is doing what it's doing.
And like in 1913, Mishkin says it's still important to have people outside the Washington-New York bubble making decisions on interest rates. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.